So we have our huddles around it every day. We have huddles at the beginning of each major shift change. We huddle around the board every day. And I really think it's a way to tie the staff to the work that they do, the importance of the work that they do in regards to the patient and as well as the organization.
What if one conversation could save a life? What if one new process or new product could save a patient from surgical harm? Broadcasting from a hospital basement near you, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the global voice of sterile processing. Each week we spotlight the best practices, products and people from around the world who are disrupting our profession and helping you fight dirty. Every instrument, every time. Join us as we have the kinds of conversation that matter and give our industry the kind of voice that it deserves. Nyt on aika mennä puhdastakin puhtaammaksi. And now it's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Amy Kellogg, Director of Sterile Processing at Guthrie Robert Packer Hospital in Sayre, Pennsylvania. Amy has had various roles in surgical services over the 12 years of her nursing career, ranging from cardiac surgery scrub specialist, OR orthopedic team leader, OR surgical operations coordinator, and OR assistant manager. She is a member of ISHM and AORN, and today she's going to be talking to us about building teams and building trust as a new sterile processing leader. Obviously, she had a great deal of experience in the OR. She got brought into sterile processing with limited experience and then has gone on to do great things. But today, she's also going to tell us about how she was able to do some really great things, and she's going to be sharing tools that were implemented to help not only create that success, but measure it and give everybody a good positive sense that things were progressing in the right direction for her department. So, Bob, I think you even had a chance to meet recently overseas of all places. And Amy obviously is excited to come on the show, and we're even more excited to have her.
I'm super, super excited to talk to Amy today. It hits home with me having come from the operating room as well. So I'm really anxious to hear about what challenges she may have faced and how she overcame them. But more importantly, the successes that she's had. It's really cool when you hear of an operating room leader who is able to make the transition and then have a really successful department. So I just can't wait to hear what she has to say today.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit onetray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Amy Kellogg, Director of Sterile Processing at Guthrie Robert Packer Hospital. And I think, Amy, you met Bob Mars out at The Hague overseas recently. You had to travel a long way to meet one of our team members, but I definitely am excited to talk to you today about onboarding for improvement and building teams and trust as a new sterile processing leader. And that's going to be exciting. But you met one of the great sterile processing leaders in the industry, and Bob, very recently. Is that correct?
It is correct. It was a great opportunity.
Yeah, it was a great meeting for me as well, Justin. You always hear folks names in the industry, and you want to meet them, and finally getting to meet them, it's really a special thing. I always tell everybody being in this industry is like having a huge extended family. So it was really nice meeting Amy.
And I think we joked, Amy, before the podcast started that meeting Bob was the highlight of your trip overseas.
Yes, of course. Yeah, of course it was.
I actually imagine it was. Bob is so great. And the reason that we kind of brought you on to talk to us today was about your experience transitioning to sterile processing. And as we mentioned in your bio during the introduction, you've had various roles in surgical services in a nursing career. And so this transition, that first week, do you remember what that felt like? And can you tell us how you wound up making that move?
Yes, I certainly remember what that felt like, just like it was yesterday, in fact. to paint the picture a little bit, at the time I transitioned into the department, there were about 50% traveler interim contract staff, however you'd like to refer to them. So about 50% in the department, and then also all of the leadership within the department, travelers interim contract. I was asked by the VP of Surgical Services as well as the interim senior director of Surgical Services at the time to transition to sterile processing and help stabilize the department.
So that sounds like a pretty daunting task, Amy.
The ask from the leadership team was to spend the first 2 weeks observing, sort of like a fly on the wall. So really what happened was I had a couple days, of getting some background on the current state of the department and the staff within the department from the current leadership. And then it just so happened that I was scheduled to go on vacation for a week. So I went on vacation for a week, which was not the most relaxing vacation I've ever had. And then I came back and I was it. I'll say. So like boots on the ground, that was it. So it wasn't a 2 week of observation or anything like that, taking notes.
Tell me about your strategy for thriving as a new sterile processing leader walking into a situation like that.
One of the first things that comes to mind is bringing your whole self to work. So that was one of the things I really tried to do, was bring my whole self to work and be engaged myself. And be honest with myself. So if I was having a bad day, I tried to recognize it. Or if anyone's having a bad day, hopefully they're able to recognize it. And maybe that's a day that you don't hang out in the department. Maybe that's an office day. Another thing is asking questions and even asking for input. So if you're working on a standard work development for the department, asking for staff input. And then once you have that input, if need be, being willing to follow up on it and being available for that. In addition to that, asking questions. So not being afraid to ask the hard questions, whether it be of your staff, of a sales rep, or even someone from an outside department. That's really one of the only ways that you can truly learn and grow. And then making sure once you do gather that knowledge to share it with the appropriate people. Another thing, too, no matter what you're doing in leadership or where you are, it's so important to learn from your losses. We all have them. One of the things that we do at our huddles, which I'll talk about more later, is if we have a bad day, we talk about it and we tie it back to the department or the patient or the facility, whichever the case may be, and learn from it. On the flip side of that, also, if we have a really good streak or if someone has a great catch, we celebrate those as well. And it could be a shout out at a huddle or a department lunch, something like that. The most important things for me as a new SPD leader over the last year or two, I've been able to make some wonderful connections with people in the industry, the sterile processing industry, surgical services, or just general leadership. These people have been so wonderful to me, supported me personally and or professionally, and have pushed me and challenged me. So, you know, as a mentor, some people get a little bit leery of the word mentor, but that's really what these folks are. And I'm able to ask questions of them, and they're also able to ask questions of me. And I feel like I've been categorically lucky to meet some of these people in the industry over the last year or two.
Now, I wanted to ask you about one particular tool, which is described as a performance board. First off, tell us what that is. And then second of all, why did you decide to use it?
So our organization really recognizes the importance of lean management. And so this board is part of the lean management system. We have this really robust operational excellence department. So they're key in making sure that departments who have this board really really use it to the full capacity. So the board that I posted on LinkedIn with much anxiety, I'll be honest, because you're kind of putting yourself out there in your department. We were actually the pilot unit in the entire system for that particular style of board. And because we embraced it so much and it was such a success, every other department now in the system has us to thank for having that that style of board. So we have our huddles around it every day. We have huddles at the beginning of each major shift change. We huddle around the board every day. And I really think it's a way to tie the staff to the work that they do, the importance of the work that they do in regards to the patient and as well as the organization.
Now, you mentioned a term that we've already heard multiple times in our broadcast, but even just recently this season, we had Marjorie Wall on who talked about Lean Six Sigma, and you just mentioned lean and the use of these performance boards. Can you just kind of describe for someone who has no familiarity with lean processes what one of these boards looks like?
Yeah, so lean in general, you know, it isn't about doing more with less. It's really about focusing on key performance metrics and being able to look at your work and from a standpoint of continuous improvement. So our board in particular, we have a couple lanes, we have a couple columns, one about performance metrics for the department. And again, these things can change. They're not static, so you can add and subtract things as you go. But one of the other columns is about employee engagement, and the other one is about cost reduction. And we're able to again tie the staff to the work that they do and the importance in the performance metrics and do problem solving based on trends that we see in those metrics. And then in the cost reduction column, actually at this point, it's tying the importance of, I'll say, picking case carts correctly, tying that to waste in the operating room.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned something that's very critical when it comes to that employee engagement, because it's connecting the employees to what's going on in the department and the OR as a whole. So did you see that kind of impact on the employee engagement?
Yeah, in fact, one of the really cool things that we noticed in the department over the last year related to employee opinion surveys specifically. So our department historically has been a tier three department. So in terms of the survey that we conduct, it would be one of the least engaged departments. So over the last year, we've actually done a couple pulse surveys, and we've been able to bump up to a tier one, meaning the most engaged department. Also, one of the metrics that we track in that engagement relates to something called a stoplight report. I'm not sure if y'all have ever heard of a stoplight report, but that's actually a way for staff to have direct input on the work that they do, on the environment, and it also holds myself as a leader accountable to addressing those concerns and updating them as they move through an improvement process. And if they can't move through that, also explaining why that can't occur.
You know, accountability is so huge. And in the servant leadership model, holding yourself accountable is critical. But when you get really busy, it's hard to keep track of all that. And it sounds like this process sort of automates that accountability so that things that would normally fall through the cracks with all the best intentions, not malicious at all, but just by virtue of this being a very high stress, high throughput kind of job, that you're finding ways to hold yourself accountable, but also automate that. And another one, and maybe it comes out a little bit in the huddle, but you mentioned the huddle, and I wondered if you had sort of a template, like what are you talking about in the huddle? What are the key, are you focusing on those key performance metrics in the huddle and saying, this is how we're doing, this is where we need to work together better? Do you have sort of a list of items that you're making sure that you're covering in those huddles?
Yes, absolutely. We actually have a huddle sheet, and it's actually something that I've shared with some folks on LinkedIn. So just kind of a general flow, we talk about priorities for the shift or for the day, the status of the patient, the status of the team, the status of the environment, and then also any particular announcements or recognition. So we have that general flow for a huddle, and then right after we finish that, we go through the performance board. We talk about the performance board at every huddle, and then after that, if there's any particular education that we need to do or any announcements that I have to make as a leader, I will do that as well.
That's really incredible, Amy. It's so amazing to hear of a leader talking about how store processing employees are becoming engaged, because they so often feel unengaged, as you know. And speaking of engagement, I'd really like to hear about your recognition board. Can you tell us how that had an impact on your department?
Absolutely. It's actually a point of pride for myself as well as the folks in the department when people come to visit for various reasons. That's something that I always like to show them and point out. So we started that, I think, maybe back in April or May. I put the idea out there. I actually had a staff member who was willing to put together the board, and she decorated it and everything else. It's really great. So it's a staff-to-staff recognition, which I think is really amazing. I, of course, recognize folks, but I think it's really it speaks to the people that I have working in the department, the team in general, that they're able to take a few seconds out of their day and thank each other. So I was actually just looking at it. Something as simple as, you know, hey, you did a great job in Deacon Tam yesterday, or hey, thank you for helping me on Tuesday. So, I mean, it could just be like a simple thank you, but it's really cool to see, because people will actually stop and read, and you know, we're looking for our own names, of course. You know, it's a really good feeling, and I have to say, even myself, every now and then, I get a recognition on the board, and it makes me feel great. I actually save all of them. So it's a really cool thing to see. And then at the end of the week, so we have an empty board on Monday. We fill it up during the week, and then on Friday at our 3 p.m. huddle, we take all the names down, and we draw for like a free meal ticket or snack tickets or things like that. So, and the staff actually have to pick them out and read them, and everybody claps. It's a really cool thing.
You know, one thing I always recommend to people who are learning how to interact with the sterile processing department, and one thing I always do anytime I'm delivering an in-service to an SPD, is I always want to finish by saying thank you to the staff, because there's no telling when the last time they heard someone say thank you was. And so the idea that your staff get to hear someone say thank you pretty regularly is probably incredibly encouraging. And it's amazing how as soon as you say thank you to a staff like that who hasn't heard it in a long time, how they just immediately light up because it's the first time anybody said that and who knows how long. So I think that's fantastic. One question I wanted to move on to is apparently you recently undertook a pretty heavy undertaking regarding your facility, regarding a renovation project. Now, a renovation project, for example, I opened a hospital, and that was a lot of work, but a renovation project is a totally different animal because you're trying to continue doing the work while you're also renovating. You know, it's kind of like trying to fix your car while you're driving it down the highway. So can you explain what your strategy kind of for that was? Particularly, I think you made use of something called a drop-in session. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So we use lean methodology in any sort of renovation that we do in our facility. So it's a 3-day session with someone from lean. So there's no way personally as a leader I would ever enter into something like this without getting input from my staff. So that's exactly what these drop-in sessions are. And what we actually did before the drop-in sessions was we asked staff for input. We split it up into assembly, Deacon Tam, sterile storage, and other. And that other column really proved to be beneficial, because you wouldn't believe how many people have opinions on bathrooms, where they want the bathrooms, how many they want, things like that. So we asked for that input up front. We then use that input during the day, because obviously we all know we're busy. We can't have staff hanging out with us, unfortunately, all day in these things. So we would work through the day using the information from the staff, the input, and then have these drop-in sessions. So we would have them multiple times a day. We were encouraging staff to participate. It's really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Some people do this for decades and never have the ability to have a say in their work to that degree, to work flows, to where things are situated. I mean, it's really a cool thing. So, yeah, we had many staff participate, and they had absolutely amazing ideas.
That really is a fantastic opportunity for the staff. I actually had a construction project that I walked into as a leader and had no input, and it was really frustrating for me, but more so for the staff, because they told me along the way that they had zero input. And then we got into a department that was not very functional, to be honest. You know, it was architects who designed it and folks who really didn't have a lot of experience in SPD. So what a great opportunity. So Amy, I'd like to kind of transition and ask, can you describe some challenges that leaders face, both new and seasoned, related to the lack of standardization in our industry? And I'll kind of steer that toward one of my favorite soapbox moments, and that would be our industry IFUs, the instructions for use. What do you think about that as far as challenges for new and seasoned leaders with regards to IFUs?
So I think that some IFUs are like putting a puzzle together. So coming at it from kind of a new perspective. Of course, I had experience with ISUs in the operating room, but not to this degree. So, I mean, we're reading multiple ISUs a week, sometimes multiple a day. And it's really, some of them are very clear and concise. Others are, you have to kind of pick and choose different things from different paragraphs to figure out how to properly handle the item. So that's a point of frustration, I think, for both new and seasoned leaders. And then also some of the information contained within isn't very clear. So things, for instance, like do not allow instruments to touch during the steam sterilization process. Okay, how do you do that? And then things like the instrument should be packaged in such a way to allow steam to make contact with all surfaces. Well, sure. I mean, that's you know, what you're supposed to do, right? And then things like just today I was reading an IFU. One paragraph was talking about how a 10-minute exposure time, there are variations in cycle lengths with a 10-minute exposure time. And then in the next box, it told me that I should sterilize it using a 4-minute cycle. So why, you know, why even mention a 10-minute cycle? You know, the whole thing is confusing enough, and then you throw in these other little glitches. It's quite frustrating, and it's difficult to be able to decipher whether or not you're doing the correct thing sometimes.
I couldn't agree more, Amy. Kind of on a funny note, when I do my presentations around the country, and I talk about IFUs, I'll often ask the audience, I'll say, are you following the IFU or are you following the IFU? And a lot of times it feels like that. You know, we open these pieces of paper that are folded into a 1-inch square and it billows down to the floor and rolls out 8 feet. And we're just like, I just want to know how to clean the darn thing. And there's all this craziness in there. So, boy, I totally feel you on that, that fact for sure.
Yeah, and I think too there are some things. So I'll give you an example of I don't know how many pages the IFU was, 30 pages, and it had 20 different languages. So it just so happened that I picked the English version that was outside of the U.S., the non-U.S. English version. So it said that we could put this particular item through a washer disinfector. Awesome. So. Unfortunately, I picked the wrong English version to read. Many, many pages later, there's a U.S. English version. And in the section that is supposed to be for your washer disinfector instructions, there's nothing. So then there's that whole piece, too, learning and growing throughout this industry over the last year. We're relying heavily on this non-reproducible process, this manual clean process. So relating back to my non-U.S. English version of the IFU, they can use a washer disinfector, but we're not supposed to for whatever reason. So there are these various instructions and this non-reproducible process that we rely on. Even reading the same IFU, my version of brushing and flushing something might be slightly different than your version of brushing and flushing something.
Yeah, and that's a common frustration for a lot of leaders. In fact, I'd say any leader in the industry. And you brought up something very particular that I wanted to go back to, was that due to your experience in the OR, you already had, you know, some familiarity with the IFUs, but just not to the degree that SPD has to deal with them. So I'm curious how you, as an OR experienced leader in sterile processing, are able to communicate why it takes so long to get something clean back to the OR. Do you have any tips for helping leaders deal with that question?
Sure. I think that, first of all, communication is the number one thing in establishing and maintaining and fostering these relationships between the OR and sterile processing, and also sterile processing and all the departments that you serve and support. So, having that relationship with the OR and being very honest with them. They may have absolutely no idea the exact steps it takes for you to process an item. Teaching them what an IFU is, letting them read it, or even you talking through it with them and saying, you know, and understanding and explaining that you're being held to processing this item in such a way. I think that once people, for the most part, are kind of talked through this, I think that they have a better understanding. Their eyes will definitely be opened in a new way to it. So I think that communication is absolutely key.
Amy, do you have any other sort of examples of these weird IFUs that you know, kind of want to bring up on this interview?
I think a couple other things with the IFUs, variations in sterilization parameters, particularly with dry times. And so, you know, something standard 30-minute dry time, but then you have things that are now saying a minimum of 45 minutes or a minimum of 60 minutes of dry time. So, I mean, that can absolutely kill your productivity if you decide to put one tray in a sterilizer, you know, just to fulfill that 60-minute dry time. Or do you decide to put other instruments in that don't require a 60-minute dry time? Is that the right thing to do, or isn't it? And I know places that are actually standardizing, and they're actually upping their sterilization, their holding times, and upping their dry times just to combat that variation and that danger and variation. So in doing that, is that the right thing to do for the instruments, and is that the right thing to do for the department, upping those times?
It's so interesting because we have so many vendors that listen to these podcasts, and definitely entrepreneurial ones too. And so sometimes they just don't have the infrastructure or the experience with developing the instructions for use. And so little customer experiences like this, I think, are really important for them to hear on shows like this podcast to help shape the industry. And Bob, maybe you had something to add there too.
Yeah, it made me think of my previous position. So I had the opportunity to travel to Europe quite a bit. And in that, visiting hospitals there, I actually posed the question to some of the SPD or CSSD leaders there, how they felt about extended cycles. And they all looked at me puzzled and said, "What is that?" And I said, "Well, it's the vendor brings stuff in, and one might have a 4-minute sterilization, one might have a 12-minute. And they said, "Well, we don't have that here. We have standard cycles that all of the manufacturers are expected to adhere to." And man, oh man, I wish we could get to that over here, but I know it's going to take some doing for sure.
Yeah, I think bringing things like this up, I mean, and not particularly from me, but the work that you guys do, bringing this to light constantly and having guests on that chat about these things, I think we need to continue the conversation. I think we can make it better. And to your point, Bob, there are other places that have kind of figured this out and set the sterile processing departments up for success rather than setting them up for failure with all of these variations. So I'm confident in the fact that I made the right decision to stay in sterile processing, because I know I want to be a part of making things like this better. I know we can do it.
Well, you brought some really excellent tools on the podcast for how to build teams, build trust, accountability, ways to measure it, staying focused on key performance metrics, just a lot of great information here. And I think the last question we wanted to ask you before we wrap is really any advice for staff who have a new leader in the department to help make the department run better and just support that new leader to learning the industry, especially if they're also an inexperienced leader?
Yeah, sure. I think advice for staff, I understand that trust is not something that's automatically given, but in areas like this, there needs to be just a teeny bit of inherent trust. So between the leader trusting that the staff are doing the right thing for the right reasons, and then also the staff trusting that the leader came for the right reasons. I'm going to say with almost certainty that no one takes a position as a leader in sterile processing for fame or glory or an excessive amount of money or anything like that. So just trusting that the leader came for the right reasons, that they came to lead you forward, to move the department forward, and then always, always keeping patient-centeredness in mind as well.
You know, Amy, one thing that I really kind of wanted to bring back and emphasize regarding, you know, your experience in the OR is there tends to be a pretty significant bias from sterile processing staff members that when a new leader comes in and it's a leader from the OR, you know, who has OR experience, you can almost hear the eyes rolling in the staff because the idea is that if they're coming from the OR, they're coming to, you know, put their boot on our throats and drive it down. And, you know, you can just feel the morale dying. And yet, you know, you came in from the OR and became an advocate for your staff and not only improved a lot of things, but also improved the employee engagement rate in a way that is just quite simply phenomenal. So I wondered, knowing this bias, is there anything that you can say to staff members who have maybe a new leader that's coming in from the OR?
I would say to those folks that just because your new leader is from the operating room doesn't necessarily mean they're for the operating room. People from the OR moving to sterile processing can have a unique perspective on the impact of the work and hopefully are willing and able to openly share that with the staff because we truly all have something to learn from one another.
Amy, you mentioned how many excellent guests we've had on this podcast. You are absolutely one of them. This was an excellent interview, and I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights, but also your experience, because it's so important that we all learn from each other in this industry.
Absolutely. I want to thank you all for having me on and this opportunity to talk about my absolutely amazing team that I have here.
That was Amy Kellogg, Director of Sterile Processing at Guthrie Robert Packer Hospital. And Mike, really just a great conversation, but also a discussion around several tools, which after we completed the interview, Amy said she would be more than willing to share with anybody who can find her on LinkedIn and shoot her a private message and connect with her. But she'll share templates on the huddle sheet, the performance board, and the stoplight report. And one of the things that she mentioned to us as well was that she was just so excited about their stoplight report because so many things had gone green because they were accomplishing what they were doing. And for anybody who is doing a repetitive and sometimes mundane task, I'm not saying that's every day in sterile processing, but there's a lot of things that we do in these departments that are repetitive. It is so important to connect all of the frontline staff and the managers and the supervisors and the director on feeling like progress is being made.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think what we see here is almost like a masterclass in taking a number of the theoretical concepts that we've talked about on the show and bringing them down to very practical levels. And we're talking about things like lean, and we're talking about things like employee engagement and connecting people to the OR and, you know, all of those things all being brought down to a very practical level. And look what happened. I mean, as Amy said, her department engagement score went from the lowest to one of the highest just from simply applying a lot of the things that we've talked about on the show. And she's really done it in an expert way. So I think if anything, it's just proof that it works. I mean, if you pay attention and do these things in very practical ways, which you can learn from somebody like Amy, you'll be amazed at what is possible.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. These tools get created because they work, and they get shared so that everybody else can make them work for them too. So I would just encourage everybody to connect with Amy on LinkedIn. She obviously has a great deal to share with the industry. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike, Bob, and myself, thank you for listening to this week's edition of Beyond Clean.